Okay, here we are, December 10th. I got my Christmassy kind of tie. We're getting closer, and we're starting on the sealed book of Moses. I noticed that the first two chapters of the sealed book of Moses, I think, would not be considered the sealed book of Moses. It kind of talks about the sealed book of Moses and how it was found, and so forth. And I think the actual sealed book starts on chapter 3. But so we can deal with chapters 1 and 2 today. And when I was reading through this earlier, I noticed some spots that the English has trouble. So I had to go to my version that I created, that I'd gone back to the Portuguese and made it in English and to understand some of the times. So anyway, why don't we go ahead and just read like we've been doing for now, I guess, and then we can discuss how we want to proceed. So Valera, would you like to start to read that first introduction and then the first verse of chapter 1? Turn on your sound. There.
And these words were spoken unto Moses in the mount, whose name shall not be known among the children of men. And now I, Mormon, will make according to the Lord's command only a summary concerning the priesthood of the Son of God. To the believers in the first set of books, I wrote, and that was open in the records of these plates, which were compiled by me as being the Book of Mormon. For Moses bore testimony of this to the chosen nation of his time. But because of iniquity, it is not found among the children of men, for it was sealed by Moses, and in later days of time were concealed by the Levites in a place called the Most Holy under the altar that sustained the Ark of the Covenant, when at last they were found before the destruction of Jerusalem and brought to this land of promise by our patriarch Lehi. Want me to keep going?
I think we might just comment a little. I think it's interesting that they were found at the time that Lehi was almost going to leave Jerusalem, and so they could be carried out of the Jerusalem area. So it was a kind of an interesting time that that worked out. Go ahead.
Okay. Now I, Mormon, I make an account of the records that were found in the days of Josiah, king of Judah, of which the prophets of ancient times spoke that these words would be sealed until the time of the end, for how much many would be tried and purified, to that presumptuous in the faith will not be able to understand, coming to become stubble for the great burning of the last day. For behold, the Lord shall pour upon all the proud a spirit of deep sleep, and again he will close the understanding of his priests, so that they shall walk like the drunken of Ephraim, staggering, but not of intoxicating drink, but by becoming drunk with the wine of obstinacy, I can't say that, and carrying out their own counsel, because his hard heart condition of bearing in greatness the lofty crown which in former times was laid upon the house of Ephraim. Do you want me to stop or keep going?
Yeah, I think that we can stop there for a minute.
Okay.
Any comments yet? I just wanted to look up for the drunken of Ephraim. That's a phrase. I'm surprised that we didn't have a footnote on that. Oh, goodness, I can't find it. That's in
Isaiah.
Ezekiel. Is Isaiah or Ezekiel?
Let's see if we can find it. Isaiah 28:1. Yeah, I'll read it.
Okay.
Woe to the crown of pride, to the drunkards of Ephraim, whose glorious beauty is a fading flower, which are on the head of the fat valleys of them that are overcome with wine. have to put that little citation right in the side here.
Yeah. And who are the drunkards of Ephraim?
Would that be us? I mean, I think the majority of Latter-day Saints, or who descend from that stock of people, are Ephraim.
Yeah, actually,
it sounds like they were drunk with pride.
Yeah, their obstinance.
Yeah, they just are so full of themselves because of the blessings that they've received that they're above receiving things through the Spirit now. And their hearts were hardened with pride.
And verse 2 and 3 kind of goes on with that same thing. Behold, the Lord hath a mighty and strong one, which as a tempest of hail and a destroying storm, as a flood of mighty waters overflowing, shall cast down to the earth with the hand, and the crown of the pride, the drunkards of Ephraim, shall be trodden under feet. And the glorious beauty which is on the head of the fat valley. Now, curious what the fat valley is too, but I think it's the same thing. It's just pride. And I think we're going to see some destruction in the not too far distant future. Hey, Steve, would you like to read it?
Yes.
Now your voice is off.
We're picking up on two there, right?
Yes.
But those who are humble will be refined and purified as gold in the furnace of the smelter. And the Lord will purify the sons of Levi from all uncleanness when Jesus Christ will come to his temple and refine them like gold in the furnace of the goldsmith, or be precious living ornaments in the temple of the God in Zion.
How do people get refined?
Through our daily lives. And struggling to do the Lord's will versus our will, overcoming mortality and understanding the God within us and hearing his voice and being refined one thought at a time, one action at a time.
Yeah, it's usually a challenge. It's usually difficulty that we're forced to go through to humble ourselves. I think that their humbling is part of that refining process.
And if you watch something be refined, because we have a forge at our house and a smelter, and to watch the impurities be burned out of it, you know, just like when Moses was shown the heavens and the stars and the creations, it was a volatile, scary experience. And watching that furnace burn doesn't look like something you would want to do, but what comes out on the other side is beautiful.
Very neat. I watch Forging Fire sometimes and I thought I'd like to have a forge. What do you do with your forge?
Send all of these boys to classes to learn how to forge and smelt and weld. And then they make Damascus steel. We take steel from railroads and they make knives and swords and billets and Damascus and woot steel and that kind of fun stuff.
Yeah. All right. Michael, you want to go on? Read the next couple of verses.
Yeah. Well, I want to point out the sons of Levi, purify the sons of Levi. We get that over and over again. I think even in the words of Moroni, we heard that phrase that the Lord will purify the sons of Levi. And what that means, I often wonder if it's, you know, the sons of Levi used to offer up offerings in the law of Moses, but when Christ came, he did away with that, and then he asked for a broken heart and a contrite spirit, that would be the only acceptable offering or sacrifice that we could give him. I wonder if he's referring to that as the new sacrifice, or if in the last days the sons of Levi will actually offer up like they did in olden times under the law of Moses. I'm not sure. I don't know if it's one or the other.
Yeah, that's good. I like to read D&C 128, verse 24, in line of that. It says, "Behold, the great day of the Lord is at hand. And who can abide the day of his coming? And who can stand when he appeareth? For he is like a refiner's fire, and like fuller's soap. And he shall sit as a refiner and a purifier of silver. And he shall purify the sons of Levi and purge them as gold and silver, that they may offer unto the Lord an offering in righteousness. Let us therefore, as a church and a people, and as Latter-day Saints, offer unto the Lord an offering in righteousness. Let us present in his holy temple, when it is finished, a book containing the records of our dead, which shall be worthy of all acceptation." And so I've kind of taken that as a genealogy initiative, but I don't know.
Russell, my mind is just interesting, so none of this is factual. It's just my musings. When I think of what you just said, and you transpose that onto each of us individually, we are that temple. That refiner's fire happens within us. We have to purge out those impurities with that fire of the Holy Ghost, with that those facts, to become whole, to be an offering of gold and silver once we have removed those impurities. And when you look at our DNA and the cells that reside in us, we're more other people than we are any cells of ourselves, that we have epigenetics in all of the cells of our ancestors. Why? When you think of the impurities that we have to remove through the refiner's fire, through that crucible of this mortal realm that can only be done in this physical temple, ye, the temple that you are, the temple that I am. Zion is an individual journey that we must do and connect ourselves to the powers of heaven. And by doing that, it's through removing these impurities, but it's the sins of our fathers and the ancestors that reside within us, that when we make changes unto the Lord, we are changing literally the past, present, and the future, all within this temple, making an offering to God, is how I, when you say that, that's what I see in moving forward and in what we can do in this mortal realm as an offering in the temple with righteousness.
Thank you. Yes, we do have within ourselves the capability of changing or influencing our ancestors. They look upon us to help them purge out what's taking place and so forth. I really appreciate that, Darla.
Okay, you want me to read 3 and 4?
Yes, go ahead.
"I do not therefore write all the things that have already been summarized and compiled by me, Mormon, in the book of Lehi, and which details everything in his record since his life in Jerusalem and the seasons that made him cross the great waters until he comes along with his family to this land of promise. I do, however, give a reliable account of the events that began to occur in his days in Jerusalem concerning the sealed book of the great Moses." So there again, we have reference to the book of Lehi, which I can't wait until we get that again. One day all these books are going to be compiled into a single record that's going to be 2,000 pages long, but we're going to get everything back, I'm sure. It's too bad that was lost, but I think the Lord foresaw it and he made provision for it. But eventually I look forward to that day when we get it all.
Yes, indeed. All right, Valera, would you like to read the first part of chapter 2 and then verse 1?
Okay. "Hilkiah the high priest was appointed to the restoration of the temple by Josiah, king of Judah, in the days of Shaphan, the scribe secretary and sophiarium of all the languages that were around the land of Israel, the son of Azalias, and the father of Ahikam, Alasa, which was later called by God by the name of Lehi, short of Elishab, meaning through whom God restores, and Jemariah and Jazaniah during the restoration of the temple. Hilkiah finds the own book of the law of Jehovah, and together a scroll sealed by the signet ring of Moses, himself hidden under the ark in the temple by the first Levites. Hilkiah delivers both the books he found to Shaphan, who reads the sealed manuscript to the king. Upon hearing the reading of the book, King Josiah rends his garments because of the abominations foretold in his record, which for fear that one of them would occur in his day, he sends to Huldah, the prophetess, master of the school of the prophets, a delegation led by the high priest Hilkiah to inquire of the Lord in the king's name concerning the prophecies predicted from beginning to end of all things concerning this world found in that record, which was sealed, if one of them was destined to happen in his day. And it came to pass in the 18th year of the reign of Josiah, king of Judah, that Hilkiah, the high priest, the son of Shallum, and the father of Azariah, began the reformation of the temple under the command of the king. In the course of these days, King Josiah sent Shaphan, the son of Azalias. Okay, hold on, sorry.
You're fine.
Son of Meshullam, to the house of the Lord, saying, go to Hilkiah, the high priest, to gather all the money from his hands, which the people brought into the house of the Lord, and take charge of delivering into the hands of the masters of work, so that they distribute it to the workers in charge, to the carpenters and to the builders and to the masons, and that we may buy timber and hewn stones to repair the house of the Lord, our God, as it is commanded by the king of Judah. Want me to keep going or no?
Yeah, go ahead and read another verse.
Okay, it happened then that the king's company came to the temple, supervised by Shaphan, the father of Lehi, whom the high priest Hilkiah said, see, I found the book of the law of Moses in the house of the Lord, for how much is together to him a part of the parchment that remains sealed by Moses' own ring of seal. And Hilkiah gave the book to Shaphan, for that he himself might research, and for a period of 3 days thereafter, stopping only to eat and rest, he read them all completely. It occurred after this that Shaphan hastened to stand before the king, first exposing to Josiah the answer regarding the expenses, taxes, concerning the restoration of the temple, saying, your servants gathered the money that was asked of the people and delivered it into the hands of those who have positions of supervision in the work, which are in charge of the restoration of the house of the Lord. It happened then that Shaphan the scribe told the king that Hilkiah the high priest delivered into his hand the lost book of Moses. And so he read it before the king, pausing and reasoning with him through what they understood of the writings they had of Moses and the prophets, and did so for days thereafter until they had finished reading in their entirety.
Any comments?
I can only imagine how their emotions while they were reading this. That's what I focused on, like the excitement, the fear, the awe that they had found this, and that's probably why they only stopped to eat and continued. Just anyway, that's my lame comment.
I don't know if you know the documentary theory of the Old Testament, that there's supposedly four authors, then an Elohim author, a Jehovah author, a priestly author, and Deuteronomy's author. But anyway, supposedly the records were pretty much all brought together about 600 BC. And the Bible we have is an output of that. Now, you could argue about whether or not the documentary thesis is correct or not. But I think that from what they're finding here, it changed their whole basis of the Old Testament. And now they had a basis to go from. And they took what they knew. And the Bible we have comes from this. And so it's a major event that they're finding this under the altar and proceeding. And yet we don't, I don't think we fully realize how big of an issue, how big of a deal it is.
I'll point out, there's two things. In verse 2, they found the book of the law of Moses and a part of the parchment that remains sealed by Moses's own ring. If you go back to words of Moroni, verse 8, it talks about this exact same thing. Shaphan was the scribe of the secretary of King Josiah in the days when Hilkiah the high priest found under the altar of the temple in Jerusalem the ancient records of Moses. Among them, one, the book of the law, and two, the sealed book itself of the things that Moses saw when he was snatched to heavenly Zion.
And so our Bible doesn't have anything from the sealed book of Moses. It only has from the law of Moses. Yeah.
And this sealed book of Moses that we have here, that this was a summary that Mormon made, right? If we go back to Moses 1, verse 3, I do not therefore write the things which have already been summarized and compiled by me in the book of Lehi. But he does give a reliable account of the events that occurred. So we're not getting word for word the sealed book of Moses. This is going to be, again, like what Mormon did with the Book of Mormon. He's just giving a summary of that sealed book. Is that right?
I don't know. I think what he just said was that summary was in the previous record that he'd written before. And now he's giving us the sealed book of Moses.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder how much, I mean, if Moses was snatched to heavenly Zion and saw and heard unspeakable things, and the three Nephites were snatched to heavenly Zion and saw, you know, and John the Beloved, same thing. Are they all getting the same vision? Is it the same record? And only John was commissioned to write it? You know, even Nephi, son of Lehi, he said that he saw great things and he was commanded not to write it, but that a future servant named John would write it. I think they're all getting the same thing. Maybe that's what we get in the book of Morian Kumar, right? The sealed set remains to be translated, that only Christ is worthy to unlatch in Zion, you know, in his temple. Maybe it's all one in the same vision.
I think so. But we do get a sealed book here, a sealed book of Moses that starts in this next chapter. And so, yeah, I'm not sure how that distinguishes between them, but I think you're right that Moses did see the same encompassing vision that the others saw.
Yeah.
What verse did we just end on? Was it 6?
4?
4? Okay. Steve, would you like to read?
Yes. And it happened that when the king heard the words of the book of law, and subsequently, as regards the sealed part of the manuscript of Moses, he tore his own garments, because among them were prophecies foretold by the Lord to Moses concerning all things related to the priesthood of the Son of God, and the consequences that fall upon the people of the covenant whenever the elders of the house of Israel disrespect their investiture to the priestly position. And the king commanded Hilkiah, the high priest after the house of Aaron, and Ahakim, the son of Shaphan, and Achbor, and the son of Micaiah, and Shaphan, the scribe of the king, and Isaiah, the king's servant, saying, "Since not we have a priest in our midst according to the order of Melchizedek, go ye even unto Huldah, the prophetess, the wife of Shalom, the man of the cleaning of the garments of the temple, and inquire of the Lord for me and for the people and for all Judah concerning the words of this book that was found. For great is the wrath of Jehovah, which is kindled against us. For how much our fathers did not heed the law of the Lord concerning the covenants received in the most holy order of the priesthood of God, the order of his son, whose image reflected among his elect on earth in order of the priesthood of Melchizedek. For to do according to all that is written in the book of sealed law of Moses in regard to the higher priesthood, so that we may be ready to receive it, and so that it may remain with us, and we are children of the covenant, and not only among the prophets appointed directly by God, but that every man of the house of Judah find yourself worthy to port it."
I want to make a comment. First off, on verse 5, I think it's interesting. his response to hearing what was read to him, tears garments and really humbled himself. Here's this king that really took to heart the words that were said. And I wonder sometimes if we take to heart the words that the prophecies concerning us. Do we tear our garments and humble ourselves to realize where we are and what's going to happen and what we need to do? And then my second comment is, I think it's so interesting that there's no one according to the elder of Melchizedek, because so they went to the prophetess Huldah. Now today we think so much of everything's in the line of men holding priesthood, but here we needed to go to prophetess, a lady, to get the word of the Lord. And they weren't afraid to do that. They did at least go to her and get it.
I wonder too, did he, and he talks about the Melchizedek priesthood, the order, according to the order of Melchizedek, since we have not a priest in our midst, was this a realization to them that they had lost the Melchizedek priesthood, or had they been carrying on thinking that they still had it? But after reading that record, the sealed book of Moses, they realized that no, it had been lost.
Yeah, we told them they didn't see how the Melchizedek priesthood was taken out after Moses. So, yeah, that record probably told them that what had actually happened.
Yeah.
That would be a lot to take on in one day if you'd been operating for a long time under, and you're being completely spending 3 days discussing it with the high priest and getting this laid upon you. Yeah, I imagine Josiah was overwhelmed. And who do you go to if this is not true? She was the head of the school of prophets, right? Mm-hmm. Be a good. I look back on that, and from what I understand, that was the school of knowledge, or hidden knowledge, or higher understanding.
Darla, would you like to read verse 7? Or start there at 7?
It happened then that the high priest Hilkiah, proceeding from the house of Aaron, together with Akim and Akbar, Shaphan, and Asiah, they went to Huldah, the prophet, and the wife of Shalom, the son of Tikva, the son of Haris, whose lineage was designated of supervision, the ones in charge of the garments of the Levites, and your he house was in the second part of the city between the street that was designated to the washers and dryers of the priestly garments.
I'll read 2 Kings 22:14. So Hilkiah the priest and Akim and Akar and Shaphan and Ashiah went unto Huldah the prophetess, the wife of Shalom, the son of Tikva, the son of Haris, the keeper of the wardrobe. Now she dwelt in Jerusalem in the college, and they communed with her. Now go on, verse 8.
It happened then that when they told Huldah these things, she said unto them, thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, tell the man that he has sent you unto me. Behold, I will bring evil upon this place and upon the inhabitants thereof, to know all the words of the book that were read to the king of Judah, for how much they have forsaken me and have burned incense to other gods, and they provoke me, the Lord who brought them out of the land of Egypt, out of the land of slaves, to make them strong and mighty nation, the sons of men, for how much they were faithful to my laws, which in the days of old I gave the house of Israel.
Yeah, I think keep going with verse 9. It's continuing her.
But now, behold, my wrath is kindled because of all the works of your hands, and my wrath is kindled against this place. It is like never before, and it shall not be quenched until every nation is scattered unto the four corners of the earth. Nonetheless, so shall ye say to the king of Judah, thus saith the Lord of God of Israel concerning the words which thou hast heard. For how much your heart was tender and humbled before the Lord your God when you heard the account of my servant Moses, who foresaw all things concerning this world and its inhabitants in a single instance, and can record the things that were to come to take place in against this place, because they do not endure the most holy order of my priesthood, which is according to the order of my son. For how much was taken from you from the days of Moses, my chosen servant, and they sought him no more in his manner of life, excepting with haughtiness a mere priesthood in relation to the things that has reserved for them, but they have not been able to endure them to this day.
It was accepting with haughtiness a minor priesthood in relation to these things.
Thank you.
Ironic, right? Fine, correct?
Yes. Well, I guess we have one more verse.
I can wrap. You good if I read? Okay, I'll read verse 10.
Okay.
These are the days when I lift up my hand against its inhabitants, that there may be desolation and cursing among them that profess to be my priests in the land which I have assigned to your ancestors. But as for thee, O king of Judah, for how much you ripped your garments and you cried before me, the Lord, that also I will not abandon you completely. And behold, I, the Lord, will gather you to your ancestors, and thou shalt be brought to thy grave in peace, and thine eyes shall not see all the evil that I will bring upon this place.
I just, as I read this, I just think that it applies to today, and it could just well be talking about us and how much we need to be like that king and be humble, because the same kind of things are going to happen here that happened there. Jerusalem was destroyed. This nation is going to be disrupted as well.
I think it's a good point. I mean, if you think about the LDS Church and the second invitation and the haughtiness of puffed up pride and how it is little by little, here a little with tradition and precept and a haughtiness to a lesser priesthood, that sticks with me, because wouldn't they be in the same situation if somebody revealed this and forced their eyes open to see that they didn't have that priesthood? And I think we could all understand, if they could get to that point, that this would become a lot bigger movement real quick, because there are people who would humble themselves. But it's going to take what it takes to get. But you're right, Russell. That's what it looks to me. It feels like the same kind of a scenario setting up.
Okay, I'm going to stop the recording this time.